It's become, unfortunately, a common occurrence in America. A man walks into a public place and starts shooting with an assault-style weapon. It's a jarring, heinous crime that traumatizes whole communities, indeed the country, particularly when these massacres occur at a school. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is documentary filmmaker Charlie Minn, who has devoted a good deal of his career to exploring some of America's worst gun massacres, and his latest film, Parkland, Inside Building 12, recounts the worst high school shooting in U.S. history, which occurred February 14th of this year in Parkland, Florida, at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Welcome back to the show, Charlie.
Thank you for having me.
You're in town to promote a screening that's coming up. You know, it was just last week, unfortunately, when someone walked into a synagogue in Pittsburgh, the Tree of Life Synagogue, killed 11 people. We had the yoga studio killings in Florida. You've been on the show with films about the Las Vegas massacre, about the Pulse massacre also in Florida. You're back with another massacre in Florida that occurred just this year. What is it that motivates you to explore these horrible, traumatic crimes? Attract isn't quite the right word, but this is obviously a focus of your filmmaking.
Well, in this particular case, the title Parkland Inside Building 12, we interviewed 40 victims that were literally staring down the barrel of a gun, watching their classmates get shot, running, ducking, hiding, praying.
These are teenagers mostly.
Yeah, kids. And so far, we've heard from a lot of people outside the building, and those were the activists who were not even inside the building when it occurred. And they rose to fame based on the misery that these kids inside the building went through. So I wanted to give those kids inside the building a voice. And I've always been the voice for the victims in just about all my films. And I've always said, growing up, feeling somewhat like a victim, certainly nothing close to the stories that I've done. I've never been shot, but I've always lived for the underdog, mm-hmm. lived for the poor, lived for the people that had struggles along the way. So that's why I make the films that I do.
And they are different than a lot of documentaries on this kind of subject, because they are so focused on the victims and the survivors. And in this case, you mentioned that you interview over 40 of those who were inside the building in Parkland High School earlier this year. When you're reaching out to people, I was taken how sober so many of them were. Very few of them broke down on camera, particularly the young people. They could recount. How do you find these people? Do they find you once you start interviewing people? They're friends of friends, and you start with one and they connect you to three more?
Yeah, it's a domino effect. You interview a couple, and then I always ask them, hey, can you get me this person or that person, or do you know others that would want their voices out there? And once you sit down with them and the interview goes well, then they trust you, and they'll start saying, hey, you may want to sit down with this person. So it's a domino effect. So, yeah, what you said at the end, you sit down with one, they can get you three people, and then those three people can get you another three people, and before you know it, you're up to 40.
How are these survivors doing? I mentioned that they're remarkably sober and able to recount without breaking down what happened just this February of this year. It makes me think they must be getting some good counseling, therapy, in order to deal with this and recount what happened.
All of that. PTSD is very common, and we can't forget that these are kids. A lot of them were freshmen,
yeah,
14 years old. I mean, a very fragile age, and this would affect 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds. Can you imagine someone who's 14, 15 years of age? So we have many, many victims inside that high school that day, and my deepest respect for the ones that were able to survive the attack and have the courage to speak out.
This film's a little different if people have seen some of your other films, in that while these interviews are occurring and the survivors are narrating their part of the experience, you have a graphic that's going on, an animation basically, that is showing the movement of students and teachers and the gunmen through a plan of the building, which I don't recall you having in any of your other films. It sort of gives us a way of tracking with the stories graphically what was happening in those minutes.
Yeah, I think that animation gives a clear picture on what happened. I mean, when you hear about a gunman walking into a school and shooting 34 people, you can kind of picture it. But I think that animation really gives a clear, lucid look at what happened. And he went on the first floor. Miraculously, no one was harmed on the second floor. But the third floor was damaged badly. The school resource officer could have saved the third floor had he run inside. The teachers did the best they could. So there's a lot of moving parts here. It's a very intense story.
And, of course, with a population, we have students and we have teachers who should not have to wake up every day and think, we have to prepare for this. Their focus is on their kids, taking care of their kids and teaching to the best of their abilities. And I can't imagine in those minutes, and it was just minutes, I guess.
Six
total. Minutes.
Then he got away. He was at large.
Yeah, that's another side of the story that oftentimes these tragedies end with the gunman taking their own life or being killed by police later. But this was a young man who just walked out with everyone else and began wandering the community, I guess.
Well, he pretended he was a victim at the end. He blended in with the crowd.
Yeah, he was just 19.
Yeah, and he ran out with the crowd. And as a matter of fact, I think he was even talking to some of the students, like, what the heck happened? When he did it, and then he runs into a Walmart, runs into a Subway, gets a drink, and then he runs into a McDonald's. And the one part that did not make the film that I could share now that I found out after the fact is that when he sat down at that McDonald's while he was at large, he sat down and he shared a table with a customer, and he had shot the customer's sister.
Oh, wow.
And little did the customer know. And the killer asked the customer for a ride. Thankfully, he didn't give him that ride.
Amazing. As with all of your films, you refer to the killer as the killer. And I know you have a particular approach to dealing with those who create these assaults. Talk to us a little bit about why you won't name the people. You don't spend a lot of time going into the motivation of the killers in these films.
I don't mention the killer's name because I think it creates copycats. And I think if the media followed my lead, we would save innocent lives moving forward, because then potential shooters would now know going in their name will never be mentioned.
Do you think they really are motivated by notoriety?
I do. I think if you keep talking about, in this case, Parkland, we have a record for the U.S., largest ever U.S. high school shooting, 34 people shot. Some criminal out there is going to say, oh, I want to go for 35. I want to break the record, and I'll be famous. But if he knows going in, his name will never be mentioned, well, maybe he won't do that. It's worth a try. What else has worked, Charles? I mean, we're seeing mass shootings every week, it seems like.
Yeah, they're certainly on the rise and becoming far too common. One of the things that came out of Parkland, though, that's a little different is in the aftermath, the students became really amazing activists for some measure of gun control and actually had a modicum of success in Florida, putting pressure on the legislature, the governor, the Republican-held government there that passed some very modest, which we typically don't see. We see a lot of outrage in the days after these massacres. We see a lot of calls for our political leaders to do something to address this issue. This was one of the few times that something actually happened in the aftermath, and I wonder if it was because not the adults, but the students at that school became so emotionally committed to making something happen.
I give those kids complete credit. I mean, today, millennials, they have so much power because they have all the social media platforms. I mean, these kids at college and high school, I address them a lot during film presentations. I tell them, you guys are not the future anymore. You're the present.
Yeah.
You've arrived. Your voice matters. Your voice counts. Go out there and vote. Try to make a difference.
And we're recording this interview on Election Day.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, don't think because no one knows you, you have no experience, no one's heard of you. No one heard of these Parkland kids.
Yeah.
But they were well organized. They worked hard. They were organized. And that March for Our Lives on the 24th of March, that was a spectacular.
Which happened across the nation, over a million
people. Yeah, in
El Paso,
too.
Yeah.
And they drew tons of people at Washington, D.C., and they certainly have made their voices heard.
They're continuing to do that, too, now that some of them have actually graduated. But it is amazing how they were able to not only deal with the tragedy at their own school, continue to be high school students, yet organize a national movement of other high school students and young people.
Yeah, and again, we can't forget the fact that they were kids.
Yeah.
These were high school kids who did this. I mean, adults would be hard-pressed
right.
to put together a spectacular event like that.
When you're shaping a film, I know these are heavily on interviews, but you often use some reenactment. Some documentary filmmakers see the pros and cons of that. You seem to be comfortable using reenactments on some parts of the story. How do you go into one of these films? Do you already have a shape that you're wanting to build the film into, or does that come organically as you get the material together?
I would say the latter. My editor and I, we sit down and we go through a clean sweep of the movie. We come up with an outline, and we adhere to it. We trust it, and then sometimes things will change depending on the interviews, what people say, who you get.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the whole editing process, and you're like, you know something? I think maybe we could stick in. Insert a reenactment here, a reenactment there. And I think that only adds to the story and makes it more transparent.
Yeah, and just to be clear, the reenactments we're talking about in this particular film is really just the movements to the school of the killer. That you're not trying to reenact the actual massacre.
No, not anyone getting shot, no.
Right, right. So the film is opening here in El Paso at Premier Cinemas Montwood next week, next Friday. But tell us about a special event you've got on the 12th, Monday, in just 2 days.
Yeah, on the 12th, we're going to have a screening at Montwood Movie 7 for teachers and the media only, because I think it's so important for students to watch this film because it's such a common theme today, mass shootings, especially at schools. So I've never done this before, so this is a free screening with a complimentary dinner for teachers who I owe a lot of my success to because they've allowed me to create awareness here in El Paso. EPCC, UTEP, I can't thank them enough. So, but they have to RSVP, though, to
info. Okay, how do they do that?
Yeah, info@bowlingmassacre.com. Again, info@bowlingmassacre.com.
Free meal.
Free
film.
Meal.
You'll 7 be there.
I'll be there 7 p.m. the 12th of November at Montwood right. Movie 7. And then that's 4 days ahead of the big opening on the 16th. The movie will run for at least a week. And the website is insidebuilding12.com.
And you'll be at the screenings the first opening weekend?
Yeah, I'm always there opening weekend to do a Q&A with the audience.
Okay, and you'll introduce the film? And
well, I'll be there at the end.
Okay,
at the end of the movie
so people
to
can
take
ask questions.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Charlie, it's always good to see you. It's amazing the output you keep up. 2 or 3 films a year, it seems.
Thank you.
So thanks for making time for us.
You're welcome.
I've been discussing the new documentary Parkland, Inside Building 12, which opened this week in El Paso, with the film's director, Charlie Minn. Parkland, Inside Building 12 recounts the events of February 14th of this year when a lone shooter entered Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, and killed 17 students and teachers and wounded 17 others. The film is screening at Premier Cinemas Montwood Friday, November 16th for at least a week-long run, and there is a special event this Monday, the 12th, at 7 p.m. for teachers and media. It'll be a free screening with Charlie Minn in attendance, and you need to RSVP through info@bowlingmassacre.com. On Film's engineer is Seth Van Meter. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.